FOMO. Varsity Headway is a beautiful marriage of our passion for entrepreneurship with kind of our other passion, which has been baseball caps and trying to make something that we both would love as a answer to our own needs.
I'm Patrick J. McGinnis, and I coined the term FOMO. That's short for fear of missing out, and it's why some people end up following the crowd when they should be blazing a trail of their own. But if you want to achieve greatness in business and life, you've got to break free. Come on, I'll show you how. This is FOMO Sapiens, where we explore how entrepreneurial thinkers find the inspiration and the courage to build exceptional lives. Welcome to another episode of FOMO Sapiens, the show for entrepreneurial thinkers. Today, this one I love because it's about a company I am obsessed with, Varsity Headwear, which is a company that makes really beautiful baseball caps. Oh, they're so nice. I have two of them. I was introduced to this company by my friend Aaron, who is just, he knows all the good things. He has great taste. I checked it out. I bought myself one as a gift to myself. And then they opened a pop-up in New York. I went and I had actually emailed with the founders a couple of years ago, and then they were going to come on the show, and I think I dropped the ball, but I had a chance to reconnect with their team at their pop-up. I got on the phone. I invited them to FOMO Sapiens. They said they would be delighted, and here we are today. The company, Varsity Headwear, is amazing. Go check them out. Seriously, go check out their stuff. It's so nice. I really treasure mine. It's the best baseball hat I will ever own. And we're going to hear about this company, how it was built by the brothers who started it. And they're from Norway, which is awesome too. So we have some European flavor, some Scandi flavor today on the show. Now, my guests are Alexander Adams and his brother, Sebastian Adams. Alexander is the managing director of Varsity. He holds a bachelor in business and finance from Case Business School in London. Now, he started his career working in private banking in London and New York, and then after a couple of years, decided he wanted to do something different, and quickly convinced by his brother, Sebastian, they joined forces to create Varsity. Now, Sebastian is the design and commercial director of Varsity. He holds a Bachelor of Arts in Product Design from St. Martin's College of Art and Design in London, and a Master of Science in Innovation and Entrepreneurship from a Norwegian business school called BI, which is in Oslo. So they have partnered up. They're coming out of Oslo. They've opened shops all over the world. It's a hot company. I went to their pop-up, or what I guess they sort of have like a store capsule within a big department store when I was out in Oslo a couple years ago. It was amazing. So anyway, this company, if you don't know about it, you're going to love it. And what I love about it, these guys take big swings. They're unexpected entrepreneurs in a sense. They started something that they were not baseball hat people, but they figured it out and have built an amazing company. So we're going to jump right in, as we always do, with the same question. And I started by asking Sebastian this. Tell me something unexpected you learned about yourself that changed everything.
That is a very good question. And I think there are multiple answers here that would be relevant. But the first thing that comes to mind is that when you start out as an entrepreneur, you second guess everything you're doing. And we still do. But I think when we learn to trust our gut or our kind of team gut feeling, that's really when we started gaining confidence in our decisions and kind of started to move faster, I think.
I like that. And Seb, I want to tell you that gut feeling, I had a gut feeling about your company. I've been tracking you for a couple of years. And for all the listeners, basically, you know, we've been working on getting this interview together. Just life happens. But here we are today to talk about your company, Varsity Headwear. And I've been doing a little research. The story is very cool. I just want to jump right in. Your two brothers, Seb and Alex. Seb, give us that first answer. Alex, why don't you just start by telling us what is Varsity Headwear?
So, we're a product specialist. We focus only on making the world's kind of best high-quality headwear. So, that's really the simple answer.
Now, when we talk about best, let's define best, because, you know, there's a million ways to do that.
So for us, it's some key factors. Quality in everything we do is critical and the most important. I think from a product specific answer is the fabric of the product, the fit, and also the overall kind of look of the product.
Yeah. And for us, it's when you're a product specialist and you're a perfectionist, you know that like it's nearly impossible to reach perfection. Perfection is more something that you're working towards and you never really achieve it, because as soon as you think you're getting close, you learn something more, you develop, you get inspired, you kind of you see opportunity. And so I think for us, perfection is like the working ethos internally here is that it's the search for the perfect cap. You know, we're trying to make it, and we're always, it's getting better. But the best cap possible is always just ahead of us, I think, is the way we think about it.
And it's in a way, it's kind of beautifully simple, because you're choosing an object, which is a baseball cap, which we all know what a baseball cap is. Like I think I own like 35 of them or something, crazy number, right? You don't throw away baseball caps unless something really bad happens to them. You collect them. And yet you have taken that item and you've kind of elevated it, given it a whole new span. I have two of your caps. We're all wearing them right now, of course. If you see the video on Instagram or YouTube or wherever, you'll see us in our hats. But when we talk about, you know, this is a very specific goal. Like it's not one that everybody's going after. So let's go back to the early days, Alex. You know, I know you know you were off in the UK. You study, you're working, you got a job over there. What was it that gave you this idea, just a few years out of college, to go out and try to start a company to make the perfect baseball cap?
I think it's the combination of two things. We've always had kind of an entrepreneurial dream. Our parents are entrepreneurs, and we've kind of grown up in that environment. So I think it's kind of been the natural path for us always. And as brothers, we've always kind of been throwing ideas towards each other, challenging each other on kind of new business ideas and et cetera. And then, you know, that married kind of this, or Varsity Headway is a beautiful marriage of our kind of, you know, our passion for entrepreneurship with kind of our other passion, which has been baseball caps and trying to make something that we both would love as an answer to our own needs.
Where did this passion for baseball caps come from? Was this something from childhood, or, you know, where it, because it's, you know, we all like a cap, but this is a whole nother level.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, we're from a small place called Norway, and Norway has, of course, very close bonds and culturally always been kind of looking up to the US culture, and kind of movies, television, everything like that has been significant here in Norway. So I think we've been inspired by that, and seen kind of caps and baseball caps in many different ways, and kind of always been interested in them. And then when we started Varsity, I think we took that classical kind of American product and then put a Norwegian, Scandinavian kind of design twist to it.
That's a really good way of thinking about it. It's kind of like, let's take, we're going to talk about Sweden right now, but it's sort of like, let's take a car, but then let's make, you know, a beautiful Saab, which I used to have a Saab, where we're going to put the key somewhere else and we're going to create a very unique experience that is going to become cult. Like when I bought my Saab, you know, it could have been, so I could have gone after something a little more flashy, but it was like, no, I wanted to have this unique thing that was ego expressive about who I am. So I'd never thought about that, but it makes sense. Now, you talk about, you know, okay, we marry our passion for baseball caps and our desire for an entrepreneurial, you know, life, but take me to the light bulb moment, because so many people who are listening probably want to do this too, or are doing this. And the big mystery is like, what was the minute that you figured out, like where did the sort of that aha moment come from? To actually think about, okay, this is what we want to do. Because on its head, you know, it's sure, everybody has baseball caps, but the idea of innovating on this product, you know, it's not that obvious. So where did that sort of aha moment come from?
I think there are probably several moments of aha, but I think the main ones were that it might be a niche, but it's a huge niche. Because when talking about entrepreneurial ideas talking about opportunities, I think it's really important to understand if it's possible to make a living out of it or not. So I think a moment for us was when we realized that if you're able to create a good baseball cap, The potential customer base is pretty big, which justifies maybe trying to cater for that market. And I think the second aha thing was that the quality and the design of the products on the market was so low that it seemed possible for us to be able to compete pretty quickly with what was available. So I think the market size and the opportunity for us to actually be able to compete, I think, were probably the two things that really motivated us to go for this.
No, it's also an idea which we could kind of bootstrap. You know, we're not like risk takers really. So, you know, it was a business idea also, which we could buy a couple of maybe 100 caps and test it and try it out. You know, it's if you would start an app or build some fancy tech company, you know, you would need to take much more risk, maybe get outside funding, etc. But this was something the two of us could get going and test without kind of ruining the rest of our lives if it failed.
I like that. So you have low capital intensity. You have a kind of a white space. We think about that 2x2, which I hate 2x2s, but you know, there's like that space where high quality, higher price kind of thing. There's nobody in that space at the time. Now, a lot of people say, okay, great, that sounds good. But was there a process behind? Did you have a structured way of processing ideas? Did you sit down every Wednesday from 4 to 5 and brainstorm a lot of business ideas? Or was this just like an ongoing kind of organic conversation amongst yourselves over the years?
Definitely the last organic conversation. At the time we kind of really start talking about this in a serious way, I was back here in Oslo after living in London for 4 years. Alex was in New York working there. So we were kind of, when we had the opportunity, we were kind of discussing ideas and it was more like a hobby to throw business ideas out at each other and see what worked and what didn't work.
So yeah, and also in the only structure I personally had was like when we were discussing kind of ideas, I would try to look at how quickly could you kind of earn $100,000. In Norway, we have a saying that like the first million is the hardest. And
yeah, we do too, yeah, by the way. It's a global saying.
We're probably stolen from you guys.
I think it's different. You guys, you're not in the euro, or are you? I can't remember. You're not in the euro, right?
So yeah, 1 million kroner is the same.
It's easier to get there.
Yeah, much more. So, but much smaller market though. So that's hard for
them. Yeah.
But yeah, at least like just if you do those calculations, you know, some different business ideas, you know, you start kind of getting a sense of how many caps you have to sell per day to kind of get to that mark, you know. And we still kind of do that here when we're looking at new stores and stuff. We still just try to break down the math, like how many hats do we actually need to sell per day to break even or to make okay profit on that thing. And I think that's the only kind of structure I had, at least on the ideas we were looking at.
Now, when I look at your company, I mean, obviously there's a bunch of different things you have to get right, but to me, there are two really big elements. The first is product design and quality, like making a, you know, something that people want to pay for that is, you know, unique to you, that really is, you know, expresses your brand. And number two is the brand. And there are two of you. So as we think about how you built this company, did you divide and conquer, or have you worked on each of the things together? Like, have you found that one of you is just more focused and better at or more excited about working on product and another about brand, or have you kind of tackled it all as a team?
So I think we had a kind of look at our skill set and said, you know, who should do what. So we definitely tried to delegate and separate our business into different areas of responsibility, and then we each kind of divided those between us. But being two people starting together, it took a while until we employed our first colleague. So you know, it was just the two of us for a long time. So I think we had responsibilities, but the other person was kind of a resource for the other person again. So like if, so I, my background is product design. So I've been kind of involved with the product design stuff, but when I was working on that, I was working very closely with Alex to try to get his feedback and kind of use him as my design partner.
Yeah, I think kind of where you want to get that is kind of, do we work separately or together? And here, kind of all major discussions are made through discussion.
Decisions,
yeah, are made through discussion. So now it's kind of discussions where we have opened up for the kind of rest of the team to take an active part. But in the beginning, we've discussed every single thing in the minute detail, and also we really kind of are two competitive people. We're completely different and kind of think of the world in a completely different way. So there's been some good discussions and some up through the years. But most of the things we do have had a lot of thought from both of us.
Now, how did you figure out how to make the perfect cap? Because obviously you come from different backgrounds, but it's not like you're coming from the industry of, you know, high-end materials and wools and things like that. What was the process? How long did it take? What did you invest in it in order to figure out what your initial sort of prototype was going to be?
It started with our own needs, our own kind of the two of us, kind of what product were we looking for when we we were trying to buy a cap? And for us at the time, 10 years ago, the caps you could kind of were available to us were very often sports related, so they were more sports accessory than a fashion,
like a New York Yankees cap, exactly. Boston Red
that
Sox.
That was really popular here. Like the Yankees cap was a fashion accessory over here, but we didn't really. So we wanted to use the product, but we didn't really feel the need to represent kind of a team or anything. We just wanted it as an accessory to our wardrobe. So for us, we were looking for something cleaner, simpler, of higher quality. Because the irony with the at the time was, you know, a lot of people had beautiful clothes, like their whole outfit was really nice, and then they put this really cheap, really low quality product on their head as like an accessory that was supposed to complement it, and we wanted something that was that fit better the rest of our clothes, really.
And I think it's a bit cool now the tables have turned. So some of the, we use really the most beautiful fabrics you can get hold of in the world, and so a lot of our clients, the nicest fabric they now have in their wardrobe is sitting on their cap. So that's pretty cool.
It makes sense too, because it is, it's a luxury product, right? So you start your pricing at around, in the US, it's about $90, if I'm not incorrect.
Yeah.
And so it's an investment. When I bought my first cap, I was like, $90 for a baseball cap. This is crazy. Now, the reality is that if you wear this thing all the time, you actually, it's kind of like the highest ROI piece of clothing you could possibly buy. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, you flip that on its head, because then you buy the second one, you're like, wow, I wore that one all the time, you know, vis-a-vis some sweater you buy that's $200 that you wear three times a month. So it ends up being, you sort of start to realize, it's kind of like, I've always believed, like, spend good money on a keychain, on a wallet, or on a money, because they're with you all the time, vis-a-vis like one thing that you haul out three times a year. So I sort of get that. Now, to make people, though, want to pay, obviously you have the quality, but you have to have a brand that people connect with. I'm curious, like, was Varsity the first, you know, was that the first idea you came up with? Like, how was the process of figuring out how you wanted to position yourself from a brand perspective?
Do you mean the name, or do you mean?
Yeah.
I think we quite quickly kind of came up with that name. And for us, it was a kind of homage to why did we like baseball caps? Because it you know, it's coming from the university and college culture. That's where it started in the US, of course. And for us, that name, we kind of wanted to honor a little bit why we like the product and where it came from. So I think that's why we chose Varsity. And then secondary, our goal has been to be best in class in creating and designing a cap. And Varsity of course, the meaning of varsity is kind of best in class, right? So for us, there were two reasons for the name. It was that it fit our kind of vision and ambition, but at the same time, it paid a little respect to where the CAP culture and tradition comes from originally. FOMO.
Tudo bem, meus queridos FOMO sapiens? Now, that right there was Portuguese. And as you know, I love speaking foreign languages. But I'm not alone. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off that list with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Now, FOMO sapiens, you know I speak 4 languages, and it takes work to stay on top of them, especially with French. C'est difficile. But with Babbel, I'm able to practice practical conversations that I can actually use in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/FOMO. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/FOMO. That's spelled BABBEL.com/FOMO. Rules and restrictions may apply. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Your business gets to a certain size and the cracks start to emerge. Things you used to do in a day are taking a week. You don't have one source of truth. If this is you, you should know these 3 numbers. 37,000, 25, 1. 37,000, that's the number of businesses which have upgraded to NetSuite by Oracle. 25, NetSuite turns 25 this year. Happy birthday. That's 25 years of helping businesses do more with less, close the books in days, not weeks, and drive down costs. 1, because your business is one of a kind, so you get a customized solution for all of your KPIs. Those are key performance indicators in one efficient system. Now, FOMO sapiens, you know the show is all about making better decisions. And with this product, you can make better decisions because you have all the information you need right in one place. Right now, download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist designed to give you consistently excellent performance absolutely free at netsuite.com/FOMO. That's netsuite.com/FOMO to get your own KPI checklist. Because you know what? KPIs are better than ice cream. netsuite.com/FOMO.
FOMO.
Okay, so let's go to a pivotal moment, I think. I'm projecting my own customer experience onto your business now. Okay, but for me, the pivotal moment, like the one that really, the reason why I bought my first cap is a little television show called Succession. Mm-hmm. I saw Kendall Roy. He had this Laura Piana hat that I read about, and I was, the hats on that show, like Kendall Roy knows how to wear a baseball cap. And then when I saw your product, I was like, this is basically what Kendall had. It's super nice. It is something I want to invest in. So to me was the first time I had seen this notion of like a really nice baseball cap. Did you see like I'm curious if you had the same perception, like when you saw that, where you're like, did that moment sort of cue you into like there was going to be a bigger opportunity, that sort of there had been a secular shift in the market and that this was a chance to be able to go after that customer? People are now more aware that, oh, like I might want to invest in something like this. Or, or am I just totally projecting myself upon you?
Yes and no. Obviously, I think.
Okay.
So that kind of Kendall Roy and who he represents in real life, that customer we have had for some years. Kind of, we have had our store in Saint-Tropez, and you meet some pretty crazy people there. And we have a lot of like similar people like him coming in the store and telling crazy stories. So yes, but I think kind of what Succession did for us and for kind of the plain cap and the high quality cap was more to get it out in the big world and maybe open it up for more people. And also maybe make it more acceptable to wear a baseball cap with kind of your nicer clothes in a non-sport setting as well.
Yeah, and I think that just, to me, we saw this market and the opportunity, and the stylists of Succession also saw the same thing, right? And it was, for us, it was a perfect timing.
Yeah, it's sort of like, what I think it does is it sort of says, hey, maybe you don't have a PJ, and maybe you don't, sort of own a media company, but, with a minimal, with a small but meaningful investment, you too you can sort of be in that space. So it's sort of like an aspirational look that most, you know, within reason, if you save your money a little bit, you can certainly, you can participate in that space. You don't have to, you know, a lot of the problem with the world these days in many is that things have become so divided that there aren't many everyday luxuries. But here, like, this is an accessible luxury that people can go after. That's also quality. I feel like I should just become your spokesman here. It's ridiculous. But I think owning that space and occupying that space, it's really hard to do. And when it's done well, you sort of get you can occupy a high end of the market, but you can also play to the mass market at the same time in a really interesting way.
And also, I think what's cool about it, it's understated luxury. You know, it's really not about brand. It's kind of back to the true sense of quality, you know, and to be able to make those beautiful products that people are willing to pay a little money without the big brand. You have to make a great product, you know, and I think that's a great thing.
And I think what's also a bit fun is that this is very much Scandinavian culture, is to kind of understated luxury is basically very much the way Scandinavians like to dress and be perceived. It's not about being flashy and showing off. It's about kind of quality and design and being a bit understated.
If you know, you know, kind of. It's that, you know, you only get recognition from other people that appreciate the quality that you're wearing.
You've just taken me to my next question. It's a perfect transition, which is I wanted to talk about the fact you're Norwegian, because when I think about it, there's a couple of things. Number one is there's this concept that I think you also, I've learned it from the Swedes, but lagom, which is the idea of not too much, not too little. So there is this notion of, you know, let's not be excessive, but it's okay to have nice things. But then there's also kind of a sustainability thing about that, you know, I know is very much part of the business culture of the region. And so I was reading in my research that, for example, you did this anti-Black Friday event where you encourage people not to just overconsume around the holidays. How does your Scandinavianness or your Norwegianness play out in everything that you do? Like, how does it make you different?
I think we Scandinavians and Norwegians, we have quite a close connection to nature. You know, one of the favorite activities of Norwegians is just going for a walk in the kind of in nature. So interacting with the nature is important here, and then kind of feeling responsibility for it and trying to make sure that we don't ruin it is a part of the culture. At the same time, we are in a position in Norway to be able to try to change the way we live and work and consume for the better, because you know, Norwegian economy is pretty good and the standard of life standard of living is high. So we're in the best position probably in the world to try to make kind of positive change. So I think that's very much a part of the culture here.
But yeah, going back to the Norwegian kind of, you know, we're up north, you know, it's super cold, it's harsh. So for us, dressing up, it's a matter of survival as well. And it might sound like a bit ridiculous, but we go skiing and cross country skiing in the mountains, you know, and like we are religiously obsessed with what we wear. Because, you know, the consequence might be that you freeze to death. So, for example, we have a passion for wool in Norway, which we kind of really absolutely love. Like, if Sebastian and I could choose, we would make everything in wool for all seasons. But, you know, it's just these things, you know, what you wear has actually an important extra attribute of not just looking good.
I think Scandinavia is a good mix of function and aesthetic.
Yeah,
that's the obviously coming from Maine, northern New England, we don't have the oil wealth of Norway, but we do value a good L.L. Bean. I mean, is what we all wear, which is just it's not as fashionable. It is a little bit fashionable, but it's about everything has to be high quality and it has to be eminently practical, because you know, you can look great, but if you walk outside in the woods, you may never come back if it's the middle of January. Exactly. So you just, you can't mess around with that stuff. Now, one thing that I find really fascinating with you two is you see it all the time. I was just at a store the other day trying to buy a product, and they had started out as a focused brand around one product, and now they have 50,000 things. They went super horizontal in their, in terms of their SKUs. And I went on your website, and you still have, you stuck to caps and then very interesting accessories. You have cleaning, you have a special cap bag, all kinds of things around the cap. But you know, you're not making shoes, you're not making, you know, whatever, the many watches, like all the things that you could potentially do. And I'm curious, is it your intention like to stay in the horizontal? Are you thinking about going, vertical? Are you thinking about going horizontal? How do you think about sticking with that mono focus versus going broader in terms of your growth?
So it's a strategic decision that we've taken. Being from Norway and trying to kind of, and our ambition of becoming the world leader in high quality cap, it's difficult to get out of Scandinavia, right? So we think if we're going to reach an international market, we have to stay focused and stay a specialist, because with the world economy and accessibility through online shopping, you basically can buy anything, right? From anywhere in the world. So we think the future is that specialists have some kind of role here, because you can buy from anyone. So if you're, it's more credible to buy from a specialist than to buy from a generalist, basically. So we really believe in it. And in order to reach that international market, we think, or we want to definitely stay focused on that segment. And then we'll see what happens in the future. But we also see that our customers love it. It gives us a lot of credibility on our product, and our products are much better, right? We don't believe, it's very difficult to do multiple things well.
So if you think it from kind of from a sports perspective, if your goal is to win an Olympic gold, you know, no one would be like asking you why you're not doing like a lot of other sports as well, you know? So that's our goal. It's to be a leader. And then in general, it pays off to focus.
Your ability to resist FOMO is impressive.
It's really hard. I would say we get
this
question maybe twice per day. And, you know, from a small market like Norway, it would be maybe easier, you know.
Less risky.
And probably more business savvy. Or like you could get much higher revenue much quicker if you just started making other things. And I think that's why, you know, a lot of people kind of can't resist or don't really have the choice to resist making more products. You know, there's some peer pressure probably, but also it takes a lot of time to build up the amount of volume you need to survive on only selling one thing.
FOMO. FOMO. If we were to go back to the great luxury brands of today and look at their trajectory, and I haven't studied this, but I'm just going to pause it. They didn't start out with 43 things. Like they all now are, if you go to Hermes store, like Hermes is selling you everything. It's like, they're probably going to have like a bottle of water at some point. But when you used to go to their Hermes store, they had like ties and they had scarves and they had a couple of different, you know, Birkin bag, whatever. Now they're doing a million things. So that is an interesting thing to think about as you study those enduring brands. They were really disciplined about making sure that they stuck to their knitting. Because I think the worst thing that happens is that when you love a brand and then it starts to just feel like they're monetizing you, and then you're sort of like, oh, they're trying to sell me everything. Like, you know, what the heck, right? So it's an interesting trade-off when you think about building something.
All the brands that you mentioned and all significant brands that we kind of look up to that have existed for many years, they've all started out as specialists. Like there's no doubt about it. Yeah. Everyone started as a specialist and then they eventually expanded their portfolio.
Well, the beauty of it is that when I walk into your shop, I don't like, so FOBO, fear of a better option, you know, this moment of paralysis where you can't decide because there's too many things. Here, I mean, it's not that there's not options. There's plenty of options, but it's not overwhelming. Like, it's like, do you want a baseball cap or do you not want a baseball cap? And then you can move on with your day. And so for me, what it really does from a psychological and sort of consumer perspective is it allows you to just make a decision and pick something and move on with your life.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think that's something we're in retail. I think it's super important in like physical retail. If you're walking down the store, like again, with our Central Pay store, we have maybe like a split second to get you to maybe get dragged kind of by your curiosity into our store. And if we're selling then, I don't know, swimwear, belts, water, whatever, you wouldn't understand, or we wouldn't have the credibility to deserve your attention, really.
All right, guys, we're going to move on to the FOMO flash round. Quick questions for you each. I'll let you each answer because, you know, why not? So let's start with the first one. First one is, share a favorite quote or mantra.
I often quote Wayne Gretzky that you try to be where the ball is or the puck is going to be, not where it is. I think that's amazing business kind of.
That's very good.
I don't know. Keep it simple. I think that's what it all comes down to always. So yeah.
Okay. I like it. Okay. Number two, going a little deeper. What's your most meaningful memory?
I assume it's related to Varsity Headwear.
Anything you want. It could be that.
I think one memory that comes to mind is when we opened the Central Pay store. Alex and I spent two weeks there. We basically put all our savings into the store. We built it ourselves, the two of us. And then we opened the store and we knew that we put everything on the line for this store. And then we kind of opened up, stood behind the counter, looking out and saw just people walking past, you know, and then you're like, okay, what have we done? And
will they come in?
So that was just an amazing kind of feeling to take that risk, but also when they started to come in and you started to have conversations, that was of course really, really interesting. And we were learning so fast and adapting as fast as we could.
Yeah, for me, I think it's the first time you ever see someone outside of your store wearing the cap. That was a big moment.
Where was this? Where was this person wearing the cap?
Our memories have like collided. So I thought I had actually seen him, but Sebastian now says he's seen him. So it was at the petrol station.
Just outside of town.
Yeah.
I love it. It's practical. All right. Number three. Name a podcast or a book that every FOMO sapien should know about.
The one I've been listening to quite a lot recently was, I can't remember the name now, but it's a podcast.
Acquired.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
Acquired.
It's really kind of a dig deep for long flights. It's kind of a luxury to go super deep into detail. I think that's a really good one. For me, I just think about kind of business and everything. So I always need some other input. So I go to sleep watching the daily New York Times just to get my head maybe on some more important world topics than what we do.
Nice. Well-rounded. And finally, Lagom. Finally, what is one piece of advice you would give to your younger self?
I think one of them is remember to say no. Like that's as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's the most difficult thing is really to say no. So, and it's very often much easier to say yes. So I think don't be afraid to say no when it doesn't feel right, I think is really important advice to give myself.
Kind of in the same line, I think we struggle with it every day. It's just keeping even like focus. We're really focused on product, but then kind of when we want to talk about the geographic kind of growth where we want to grow internationally, we always make the same mistake and we just go too wide. We just came from a meeting now talking about kind of our more like a serious scaling strategy in the US, and it's like so easy for us here in Europe and here in Norway in particular to just kind of think of that as one market, but we always have to kind of make smaller pieces and focus. And I think that's the mistake we make again and again.
All right, everybody. If you want to find out more about Varsity Headwear, now in its 10th year, you can head over to varsityheadwear.com. On Instagram, if you want to see what the cap looks like, you can also go there. It's at Varsity Headwear. Alex and Seb Adams, founders of Varsity Headwear, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
FOMO. If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me on Instagram at Patrick J. McGinnis, on Twitter at PJ McGinnis, and on the web at FOMOsapiens.com or PatrickMcGinnis.com, where you can get all kinds of free resources to live a more decisive and entrepreneurial life. FOMO Sapiens is recorded in New York City. Theme music is by Mike McGinnis, and editing and post-production is by Josh Elstro. If you like today's show, please be sure to rate it and recommend it to your friends. And as always, you can find me at FOMOsapiens.com and at PatrickMcGinnis.com. To advertise on FOMO Sapiens, reach out to contact@FOMOsapiens.com.